Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And we welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on our 102.5 the game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How are you doing this morning?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, Will Levis looking a little bit better the last 2 weeks. Yeah. Played well against the Chargers. Threw a 98-yard touchdown, looked pretty good against Minnesota. Now, granted, that led to an impressive 17 points of offensive output for the Titans against the Chargers and 13 against Minnesota. So nothing to write home about in terms of the offensive production as a whole. But what have you made of the way that Will Levis has played since coming back into the lineup?
Yeah, I mean, I can't lie. Like, when I looked at – I didn't look at everything, but when I looked over some of the – you know, cut-ups from the loss to Minnesota. He had some nice throws. I mean, the 98-yarder, I was like, oh, is that just a bust? You know, is that just a mistake? No, he threw a really good ball. I mean, put it in a spot where, it made the play possible. And I think you kind of look at the situation with him in the last couple of weeks, and I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but it's positive, and I certainly don't want Will Levis to fail. So it's sort of like Bryce Young when he came back on the field. It's like, okay, is he going to take a step forward? Is he going to show that he can be better than he was when he went down? And I think Levis has definitely done that in back-to-back weeks, hasn't produced, obviously, the outcome in either of those games that you would ultimately expect. But a little bit of flicker of light, you know, gives you something to watch the remainder of the season. Obviously, the road game at Houston on Sunday is going to be a pretty big deal. I mean, really, the stretch coming up, Houston, Washington, those are two teams that are going to be playoff teams on the road. Pretty big deal. The home game against Cincinnati on December 15th. I mean, Cincinnati's putting up points like nobody's business. The record's terrible, but you're definitely going to have to score a lot of points to stay in a game with them. So, you know, I think the next four games should tell us a lot about where the franchise is going and where Levis is headed and whether this is real or not. But I don't know. I mean, it's positive. That's the biggest thing is when you look at the film. I talked to Nate Tice on our staff, and, you know, Nate does a ton of film stuff. And I said, what do you think of the Levis cut-ups? And I don't think he watched a ton either, but he said he definitely saw some good throws. And I think he looked more poised, and let's see if he can stack it. That's the biggest thing, is just stacking one on top of another. And really, I do think the Houston game is extremely important. The thing about Minnesota that's interesting too is it's a very, very good defensive team. They can create a lot of chaos. And it wasn't like I was sitting there watching Levis, at least again, and it was limited stuff that I looked at, but I wasn't like, oh, he looks so confused. And they do confuse a lot of quarterbacks, particularly when, you know, they have that heavy look where they've got seven guys in the line of scrimmage. And it's like, okay, all the decisions you have to make are now made post snap. You don't know exactly what you're going to be looking at until the snap happens. And then you have to process. And it felt like Levis seemed pretty composed about it. What do you guys think? How's it being absorbed there?
No, go ahead, Robbie.
No, I mean,
don't all run out and
well, I think it's immediately. I think it's about like you put it, like, you know, it's like, okay, well, that's cool. It's better than being completely horrible, which is what it's been most of the year. So let's see if you can do more of that. I don't think anybody's running away with, you know, him being now the franchise quarterback moving forward.
Sure. It was, here's the thing though. It's two good defenses, right? I mean, the Chargers are a good defense, and Minnesota's a good defense. So, and again, neither game was really close. But you ask yourself, does he look like he's still coming apart at the seams, or does he look like he's settled down a little bit? He looked settled to me. And again, I haven't watched everything, but he looked a little more settled down. And I think, like, it's interesting to see how the staff now handles him moving forward, because one of the things that Chicago has done, I was talking to somebody there about Caleb, and I said, okay, Thomas Brown's calling the offense there. Like, what are you going to do? And one of the things that they told Caleb Williams was, okay, here's the set of options. One thing we want you to do that maybe you haven't been doing up until this point is, if you don't see the obvious connectivity after the snap. If the decision does not present itself pretty quickly, go ahead and run. Like, access that part of the game. You can do that. And we're okay with that right now. It'll give you some confidence, and, you know, it'll make things a little more difficult for the defense that's facing. And he did that last week. You could see it. Like, he would drop, look, if he didn't see it right away. You know, I think they utilized some other things, the scheme game as well, the screen game as well. But if he didn't see it right away, he was starting to run, and that was creating problems for the defense. You could see he clearly looked more confident. And that's kind of what I want to see, what the offensive staff and what Callahan does, you know, with Will Levis is, all right, let's see if maybe there's other parts of your game that you can access. If something's not working, let's just get you some confidence and let you settle in. And, you know, like I said, you don't want to get overly excited, because it's positive, and okay, let's just take it as a positive and see where it goes. But I'm also curious to see if maybe they allow him to do some other. I think his athleticism, his ability to kind of move and run with the ball a little bit. I know he got hurt, so that's a little scary, but I'm curious if that's something they'll let him maybe reach for a little bit more down the stretch.
That was remarkably positive for a known Levis hater. Speaking,
I don't listen. You know, I want to see every quarterback succeed. Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young, all these guys that are struggling. I hate it when these top tier guys or you know, young guys, especially. I mean, Levis has got a ton of tools. You know, he has so much going for him. I hate to see him fail. So, my hope is that we see another step forward against Houston. We see another step forward against Washington. And then I hope in the game against Jacksonville, when you absolutely should be able to put it together against Jacksonville and put up a number and really play well, I hope that's what this builds into. Because to me, if that happens, then all of a sudden you're saying, okay, maybe there's more to work with here. You know, maybe this isn't the panic button. We got to change quarterbacks in the offseason situation, which I think would be a very, very positive development for the Titans, because I don't think this is the good year to be looking for another quarterback this offseason.
Well, speaking of hated quarterbacks, what's going to happen with our guy Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, he's not going to be in New York, right? It sure seems that way. I mean, it's Joe Douglas, obviously, GM, gets fired. You know, I had a chance to talk to somebody after that happened. Things kind of calmed down the next day. And I think I was a little surprised by he, you know, from what I understood, Douglas, I don't want to say he was relieved, but I didn't realize how completely miserable some of the situation had been. Like, someone actually said to me, basically, when Trump lost the election in 2020 and Woody Johnson was coming back from the UK, that's when it ended. Like, that's what, cause I had tweeted out like, hey, you know, the end of this was really when Rodgers came back and was a shadow of himself. But this person I talked to the day after Joe got fired was like, yeah, no, you kind of have to go back to when Woody returned, because when he came back into the fold, he didn't like, it was like, it was the purse strings got pulled, all of a sudden money got super tight. And then all the decisions, like Woody wanted to make all the decisions, and he crept more and more into football, which I didn't realize the depths of it. This whole idea that and great for the Athletic, by the way, cause I didn't catch a whiff that he had said anything about benching Rodgers. Like, that came out of left field. And I talked to a lot of people in the organization. I'm like, how did I not hear this? Like, this is crazy for him to say that, and it to kind of be kept quiet that long is a bit of a stunner, particularly when they were playing poorly. Now, you know, there's going to be some different vantages about like how serious was he when he said this in this group. And from what I was told, when the question got asked, like, are you serious? He didn't respond to it. He wasn't like, yes, I'm serious. It's still, for him to even say something like that in a mixed group, they haven't responded and said it wasn't true. I haven't had any pushback from anybody I've spoken to since. It's just wild that they've gotten to this point with that owner, that quarterback, and for a GM who added a ton of talent, won some trades pretty handily. You know, I think he'll be back in the personnel ranks somewhere pretty quickly. It might be a while before he ever gets another general manager shot. I wouldn't be surprised if he did. But considering how poorly Woody Johnson is viewed in the NFL, and it's going to get worse, particularly as more stuff comes out, you know, he'll have a shot. Now, that question is that extend to Aaron Rodgers? And I don't know. I honestly don't know, because there will be teams out there that need quarterbacks. Rodgers does not want to play anywhere where it's some kind of a rebuild situation. So I can't see him going to like the Raiders are going to be an obvious team of need. The Giants obviously are in town, but they're going to be a team of need. New Orleans, maybe. Obviously, there's a question. Let's see what happened with the Titans. But he's going to want to go somewhere where he can affect his legacy. That's what, when you talk to people close to Rodgers through this experience in New York, I think there's definitely one thing weighing on his mind. It's just this whole idea of is this really how I want to leave it? Will this be my legacy? And I think that's why he came out and said already, I want to play in 2025. Well, if he wants to play in 2025, unless the new coaching staff that comes in wants him, I think there's a chance that Woody may tell the next coach and general manager, we need to start over at quarterback. We don't want this guy in the organization. He's going to have to go somewhere else. And it's just hard right now to see a natural fit. An interesting thing, I will say, you can go back to who wanted Rodgers in the past, right? I think the Rams at one point had some interest in Rodgers. So if Matt Stafford departs there, maybe there's an opportunity for him in L.A. because there's no other quarterback. I think the 49ers, I'll say this about the 49ers, pay close attention to how Brock Purdy plays the rest of the way, because I'm definitely getting the feeling that this idea that they could be inclined to go, yeah, let's go one more year with Purdy rather than just giving him the extension now, unless he plays lights out the rest of the way. I think if he struggles down the stretch, and let's say the 49ers miss the playoffs, I think you'd see that team go, let's do what Cleveland did with Baker Mayfield, give it an extra year. We can always franchise tag him if it doesn't work out, getting an extension done, but let's get another year to process it. Or being Kyle Shanahan being who he is, he could go, I bet you I can still make it work for a season with Rodgers, and then we can reassess. I doubt that happens. I really doubt that happens. But I again, I'm just spitballing here because I'm trying to figure out if Rodgers wants to play and he doesn't want to play somewhere where it's a situation where they're building or rebuilding, where does he go? Where are the teams that he could have a playoff shot pretty instantly? Those situations, I don't know why you would roll the dice on this guy at this point, unless they're seeing something on film that I'm not.
So Charles, Cincinnati is 4-7, and you've got Joe Burrow has put up 27 touchdowns, 4 picks. Yeah. He's playing incredibly well. You mentioned it. They're scoring a ton of points, and they're 4-7. Do you think Zach Taylor could be in danger here of losing his job?
Oh man. First and foremost, I'd say under any other ownership, because there were Super Bowl aspirations. Burrow's been healthy. They're putting up numbers. But with that ownership, I tend to go no, because he's still got, it's not like it's not a Dallas situation where he's in the last year of his deal. Cincinnati, they don't like to fire owners because they're cheap. They went through years with Marvin Lewis where it was like, yeah, should they make a change? Probably, but they weren't going to do it because they're like, we'll owe them money. We're not going to do that. So I think that's part of what saves them. I think the defensive coordinator, Lou Anarumo, I think probably out the door, because at this stage, when I look at the Bengals, it's not like they're, as you said, they're not scoring points. They're putting up numbers. That's not the problem. The defense is the problem. You give up 34 to the Chargers, 35 to Baltimore, 37 to Philadelphia, right? 41 to in the last loss to Baltimore early in October, 38 to Washington earlier in the season. They have not fixed anything defensively. So I could see them saying, okay, let's make a swap out at defensive coordinator and see if that's the thing that ultimately makes the difference. I just don't think if you fire Zach, it's not that you just owe Zach, you owe all the other coaches too, who still have money remaining on their contracts. And that's just not a move that ownership likes to make. I know the fan base is upset, but we all know Zach's an offensive coach, right? Does the offense look like that's the problem right now? No, it doesn't. It's clearly the defense that looks like it's the problem. If you can go out and get the right defensive coordinator, maybe things change pretty quickly. But there's no doubt Burrow's upset, and he has every right to be upset. I would, if I'm the Bengals, I'm like, okay, we'll swap out the defensive coordinator, but what are we doing with the wide receivers? Because we have to extend. We have to extend Jamar Chase. We have to extend T. Higgins if we're going to do that. And it doesn't feel like we're in a hurry to do that. These guys are upset. And, you know, where do we go from here? He made a financial decision, by the way, on Mixon. I mean, that was ownership driven. The owner's the GM, Mike Brown. And look at what Mixon's done.
They're missing him.
Yeah, massively. I mean, look, no offense to Chase Brown, who I think is a good player, but you know, he really needs to be part of a two-man backfield. And Mixon's been, when he's been on the field for Houston, he's such a difference maker for them. Prior to the hip drop tackle that he got injured on earlier this year, they were saying, okay, we're going to hardwire it. We're going to run it. We're going to get this guy like 25 touches a game. We think he's still got it in his legs. And he has shown, absolutely, particularly since he's come back from the injury, he's got it. And they're a different offense when he's playing the way that he is. And that was a Bengals ownership decision. That wasn't Zach Brown. Wasn't like, hey, let's get this guy out of here. They just didn't want to pay him anymore. And they had the ability to move off him and get, what, a seventh? Ugh, yeah. So ownership's part of the problem there too.
Yeah. Like I don't really think Zach Taylor should get fired, but it's gotta be really heartwarming for Bengals fans to know that ownership is so cheap that, you know, it's just out the door. We've talked some about that here, Charles, with, you know, the firing, the possible firing of people, and Amy Adams Strunk is paying people already.
Wait, how many
and
people that's, gonna pay? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you about, in this next coaching cycle, is there is talk about, obviously trends are so important, and everybody, and it's a copycat league, of course, and you've had the Zach Taylors and the Brian Callahans, and of course, you know, coming, spinning off the McVay and Shanahan, McShanahan, the McShay, whatever you want to call it, success. Yeah, exactly. And now there's this talk about, of course, you know, I think Vrabel's going to be a prominent name in this cycle. He's going to get a job,
sure,
as long as he doesn't want to be spiteful and just keep getting paid to do nothing by Amy Adams Strunk. But do you sense in talking to people around the league that the quote unquote culture coach, and of course Dan Campbell is the poster child for this, right? Is becoming more in vogue and maybe infringing on the whiz kid offensive coach?
You know, what's interesting is I do think the dynamic that Detroit has sort of injected into the minds of owners. I was talking to a team president for an NFC team, and he's somebody I've talked to in the past. Like, he's been in the league decades, very highly respected. You know, he's been up for huge posts with the league office and all these different things. And he's hired and fired a lot of coaches and stuff. And we talked in the past about the, like, hiring in sets. And what we always talked about was the idea of, like, okay, you hire the tandem that you hire. It's the GM and the head coach, and you want to create some, you know, some guys that are rowing in the same direction. They're fighting for each other, but there's also a little bit of dynamic tension between those two. And it was interesting. I was talking to him the other day, and he said, I still think the set thing is a thing, and GM is still important. He said, but I do get the sense that you hear more when you go to owner meetings. The set now is, who is your head coaching candidate, and then, like, who's your top coordinator? And the dynamic that I think some owners are interested in is a motivator and a tactician. Like, that's the set that now you're trying to hire, whether it's a defensive tactician or an offensive tactician. You want a motivator, and, you know, probably in the top spot. So, like, a Dan Campbell type. And then you want a highly coveted or highly thought of tactician, either in your defensive coordinator spot or your offensive coordinator spot, who's probably a head coaching candidate, who you can pay enough and keep around for at least a couple of years. And then that tactician can also groom someone into his position after he leaves. That's, to me, that's Detroit, right? Isn't that what that sounds like? It sounds like Dan Campbell, Ben Johnson. And so So I would say that, you know, in this rotation, if Mike Vrabel, let's say, is a head coaching candidate, if Bill Belichick's a head coaching candidate, the next question that's going to be is like, okay, you're building your staff. Tell me who your DC or OC is that's really a difference maker. That's who is your, you know, okay, it's Kevin O'Connell. Who is your Brian Flores? Now, that's Flores is both a tactician and motivator. I think, you know, O'Connell's a little bit of both, but that's not necessarily what they knew when they put those two together. I think they thought, okay, O'Connell's our tactician. Flores is really going to be the motivator. He's the loud guy in the room who gets things together. But he's just been exquisite drawing up defensive game plans as well. So that to me, I think, is kind of the dynamic beyond getting a good GM. But I think now when owners talk about coaching staffs and they want to hire a head coach, they don't just say, show me your book. They want to know, you know, show me your book. Show me who you're going to hire. Show me who you fill your staff out with. But tell me why you have a defensive coordinator that's going to, you know, be an agent of change in the NFL. Tell me why you have an offensive coordinator who's going to be ahead of, you know, the curve right now. I'll give you an example. The Chargers, you know, Minter right now, Jesse Minter, is what he's done with that defense has been really, really impressive. I mean, you know, he's impressive in college. There's no question what he did at Michigan was something that raised some eyebrows, but Jim
Connor Stallions Harbaugh, helped, but sure.
What's that?
Connor Stallions might have helped a little bit, but whatever.
Oh, here we go again with that.
Oh, I mean, dude. He doesn't have Connor Stallions. You want to watch those video? Do you want to watch those video clips of that Ohio State game where Connor Stallions is whispering in his ear before every play? I mean, no, he's a
okay,
good.
But there's no
he's
Connor
a good
Stallions
DC.
Now. I mean, okay,
I
let's
get
put
it.
Connor
I'm just
Stallions.
Saying.
Just let
do
it
we
go,
know that?
Though. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, do we know that? That's a good point.
Dude, by the way, are you going to keep harping on that? Did I not tell
yes,
you?
Yes, he is.
This is a. Like, Joe, literally there is a esteemed, heavy-hitting Titan coach who, for years, the quote-unquote rumors are that he had all 22 tape that they were breaking down at halftime of college games, okay, that, which you cannot do. Like, yeah, let's look at the all 22 of the first half. And
I'm here. Name names.
Yeah, I'm not going to get sued.
you better text me right after this.
But again,
I'm just saying.
A good example. Like, the Chargers are a good example that everybody thought, okay, we know what we're getting in Harbaugh. People weren't entirely sure what Jesse Minter was going to bring to the table on the NFL level. And he's been great. He's done a fantastic job with that Chargers defense. I think he's going to be somebody that will be thought of in the next rotation. So, yeah, if you're going to replace your head coach, don't just think about the head coach. Now I think it's you need to know that they've got ties. There's a coordinator who's really a wizard that they're going to bring along. And I think when you look at kind of the dual roles now, it's not just GM coach anymore. It's important to make sure that you have a coordinator who's a difference maker out of the box. So at least one half of your football, you feel extremely confident in it. Stop talking
great
about
Charles Connor Robinson. Stallions. I know he loves him some Connor Stallions. Man. Big time Connor
hey,
Stallions.
Hey, I'm a Jesse Minter fan too. He was good at Vanderbilt and then Michigan stole away. I'm just saying, like, Connor Stallions seriously was telling him what play to call every play before at the Ohio State game where CJ Stroud all of a sudden couldn't complete a pass. I'm just throwing it out there.
I mean, every team does it. It's true. Like, I know you don't want to hear that complaint, but it is true. And I've heard all the stories about the syndicate, like all these guys getting together in the off season and trading or, you know, every week and near the end of the week trading, you know, here's what this looks like. Here's what that looks like. I mean, when Michigan got killed by TCU, I'm telling you, man, everybody was like, man, TCU got all kinds of stuff, signal stuff from like everybody.
Well, they got told to change all their stuff because
no, it wasn't
Michigan
just
had a
change, yes. it wasn't just change okay. Your stuff. It was here's what Michigan's running too. Like okay. it's
I don't
you gotta
that.
Let this college football is cheating. Okay, it is. Like it always has been. Is you cheat in recruiting, you cheat in your coaching, you cheat in the off season when you're not supposed to be coaching the team. You cheat with your staff size, you know. We haven't even gotten to the academics. Like, come on, man. Like, oh.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. That's right.
It's the pirate. It is our era of pirates. Like, that's what college football is.
It's the only way that
pirates in our lifetime. Those are the pirates of our lifetime. College football.
It's the only way a goober like Shane Beamer could take down Josh Heupel that one time. Charles, great stuff as always. We appreciate your time. We'll talk to you next Thursday, my friend.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good week.
Charles Robinson, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. Lots to react to with Charles. We'll do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.